You and I back together again midweek Wednesday style, kicking off a brand new month on May 1st, 2024, right here on Connecticut Today, where I wondered aloud about who the so-called external actors are that are allegedly causing much of the current unrest on college campuses across the U.S. Stonington GOP State Rep Greg Howard, who's also an active duty police officer, talked about some key votes earlier in the week at the Capitol regarding marijuana law enforcement policy. And Hearst Connecticut Media Editor and columnist Dan Haar checked in live from the state capitol with the latest legislative update for us. So I asked this question yesterday. I was asking myself this question last night as I was banging between hockey and basketball and the cops moving in on Columbia last night, which was just wonderful to see. Get out of here. Go home. And I'm going to ask the question again because nobody is giving us an answer. What in the hell is Joe Biden so afraid of? What is the White House so afraid of? Why are they quaking in their boots here to come out and say something substantive on what's going on at college campuses across the country? What are they afraid of? Now, I know it got broken up. The stuff has been peacefully resolved at Yale and at UConn. Wasn't so peaceful last night. And here's the thing. Now, what are you going crazy for, Paul? I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. Over the past couple of days, there has been this new talking point out there. And I was thinking about this last night as I was enjoying my beef lo mein noodles and my chicken soup and my egg roll while watching, again, the NYPD move in to Columbia and watching a bunch of stuff here. And we're hearing that, well, these aren't all students. It's outside agitators, okay? Outside agitators. Here is the mayor of New York City, a former cop, by the way, Eric Adams, last night or this morning.
It was about external actors hijacking peaceful protests and influence students to escalate. There's nothing peaceful about barricading building, destroying property.
All right, external act. Let's hear that again, because here's my point. I'm going to make a point here about the lack of guts from the White House and the lack of guts from the guy in the Oval Office.
It was about external actors hijacking peaceful protests and influence students to escalate. There's nothing peaceful about barricading building, destroying property.
So that's supposed to now make us feel better, I guess. Here's more from the mayor.
There is a movement to radicalize young people, and I'm not going to wait until it's done and all of a sudden acknowledge the existence of it. This is a global problem.
All right, wait a minute now. The mayor of New York City, who is privy to a lot of inside information here, and a lot of intelligence, NYPD, FBI. Remember, New York is still the most targeted big city in the country and probably in the world, along with London and Paris, whatever. Listen to what Eric Adams said here again.
There is a movement to radicalize young people, and I'm not going to wait until it's done and all of a sudden acknowledge the existence of it. This is a global problem.
All right. Now, sorry, Mr. Mayor. So wait a minute now. You have this coming from various intelligence sources. You have this coming from the mayor of New York City, again, former cop who's obviously in communication with the NYPD and the CIA and the FBI. Where's Joe Biden? No, honest to God, where is he? Now, yesterday, they issued a statement, but still, for some reason, he won't appear behind a microphone or in front of a lens and talk about this. Why is he so scared? What's he scared of? Is he more worried about Michigan and losing the Muslim vote in Michigan? Here's what the White House said yesterday. Quote, President Biden respects the right of free expression, but protests must be peaceful and lawful. Forcibly taking over buildings is not peaceful. It's wrong. That came from Andrew Bates, the deputy press secretary. And they also denounced anti-Semitic smears and the use of intifada. This from the Washington Examiner. The White House continues to take a largely hands-off approach to the protests, including those that have turned violent and led to mass arrests of pro-Palestinian demonstrators. Asked Monday whether the White House supported peaceful protesters being suspended or removed from schools, along with their more violent peers, Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said that the determination is best left to the individual schools. Really? Do you think they would say this if Black or Hispanic students were targeted? Here's what she says. I've got to be super, super mindful. These are institutions, some of them private, some of them public, and it's up to their university leadership and colleges to make that decision. Not going to weigh in on that from here. What? Meantime, you've got Eric Adams now and some other mayors saying, I want you to listen to this again, because Joe Biden is saying nothing in front of a camera. Nothing. The White House puts out some tepid statements every two or three days, and Joe Biden is hiding. Meantime, some guy who has Iguglioni is the mayor of New York.
It was about external actors hijacking peaceful protests and influence students to escalate. There's nothing peaceful about barricading buildings, destroying property.
All right, now, okay, these external actors, and it's being phrased so many different ways, external aggressors, external actors. Okay, who are they? Because if we know these are external actors and this is happening at colleges all over the country, it's happening now at Fordham in New York, there's stuff going on this afternoon at other colleges, and we're hearing from people like Mayor Adams and these other officials. I was watching some cable news last night while I was watching hockey and basketball and enjoying my beef lo mein, I have to tell you. Little wonton soup on the side. Okay, fine. Give me a break. It's one of the few things I like in life. Who are these people? Well, we know they're external act. All right. Who are they? As in, what are their names? Are they American citizens? Do they belong to organizations that get funding from George Soros, from the Rockefeller Foundation? Who are they? Did you get a hit on a computer with some facial recognition software? See, folks, here's my problem. You're starting to hear over the last couple of 3 days this meme of, well, don't blame the students. Okay, fine. Maybe I don't blame the students. There are external actors. Well, who in the hell are the external actors here? Why don't we have any names? Where are the mugshots? Who are they? Where are they from? And what's the White House? And I don't mean some tepid statement. What does the President of the United States think of this beyond, oh, people have to be nice for it? Now, if these are external actors, has Joe Biden been briefed on this? Have we known about these people? Is there a network of these people maybe operating in the country, and now finally they saw an opening at Columbia and at, you know, UCLA and USC and all the and Yale. I mean, honestly, maybe it's nothing, but all of a sudden we're starting to hear, well, external aggressors, external actors, this and the other. All right, and don't we have a right to know who they are? Especially, now think about, well, Paul, you know, no. Supposing your kids are going to school with these ne'er-do-wells. Do you think about that? Are they sitting next to somebody in class, or are they in the same dorm or the same frat house with somebody who, for whatever reason, is there to undermine American society? And where do you start this? This is in the colleges, in the petri dishes, where you have some radical professors like the ones at Columbia who actually praised October 7th. And again, we're getting nothing from the White House. We're getting nothing from the White House except a tepid statement every 3 or 4 days when things bubble up again and you've got Karine Jean-Pierre going, I'm not going there. Really? Honestly, are you serious? What is this, a bad dream? Where's the leadership? Okay, maybe there's a reason for the quiet, but at least Joe Biden should go out there. Doesn't have to take any calls or any questions or anything from anybody. He could say, folks, listen, I see what's going on. We're working on this. But not a word in person in front of a microphone. But, and here's the thing. When we come back from the break, I'll get to some calls here right now, bottom of the hour. When we come back from the break, I will prove to you beyond a reasonable doubt, use a little court lingo there because of all the court terms, that Joe Biden and the White House are more worried about November and the Muslim vote in Michigan than they are about safety on campus. And they're more worried about the women's vote in November. I have proof of that beyond a reasonable doubt, including some votes that ended up happening earlier in the week regarding possible changes to marijuana policy that did not fly, and they sound like common sense, but I guess not. Return visit, one of our buddies, our pals here on the show, Republican State Rep. Greg Howard, Stonington area, along with being a state legislator. Greg is also an active law enforcement officer, active police officer. Greg, it's Paul here again, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon, sir. How are you? Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
I'm good, Greg. Great to have you back on the show. So tell my listeners here what went down here. I understand, before we get to the consent to search thing, I know, which was the Third Amendment that was defeated, talk about a couple of marijuana amendments here, because, Greg, I am shocked that these two amendments that were put up the other day, they just sound like common sense for you, for me as individuals, as parents, as guardians, and you as a police officer, but they were struck down. So talk about these amendments here.
Sure. Thanks so much. So, Monday night, well, I should go back, Paul, back to 2021.
Sure.
When we legalized cannabis in this state in a special session in June of 2021, some of the provisions in that made it illegal for an individual driving down the road to be smoking marijuana while they were driving. I hope it goes without saying that marijuana and THC is an intoxicant and impairs one's ability to drive. We also said that because of the way that secondhand smoke impairs those around them, no person could smoke marijuana in a vehicle while someone else was driving. We made those things illegal.
Mm-hmm.
But we did something very unusual and very not sensible. And what we did was we said any police officer who observes this behavior cannot stop somebody for it. I ran an amendment back then to try to adjust that and fix it in real time, which was struck down at the time. And we ran an amendment Monday night again to try to fix that one problem. And unfortunately, Democrats voted it down. So then we said, well, we know that secondhand smoke is harmful to young children. And in fact, we made the marijuana cannabis when we did it in 2021 so that individuals had to be 21 years old.
Sure.
To purchase it.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, okay, to our Democratic colleagues, well, if you don't agree with stopping someone who's impairing their ability to drive, perhaps if a police officer observes somebody impairing their ability to drive and the officer sees a young child in the car, can that person, the officer can then stop that person? And again, our Democratic colleagues said no to that as well, unfortunately.
You know, Greg, that to me, and to me, Greg, I always say there are certain things that should not be partisan, should not depend on race, should not depend on ethnicity, should not depend upon this notion of over-policing or under-policing. So you mean to tell me, Greg, and you are an active law enforcement officer, so you're part of the fine men and women that do this. If you, and I want to make sure I understand this and people understand this, if you see somebody behind a wheel and they're taking a drag on a joint, you cannot pull them over, or can you?
You cannot. And you know, some of the individuals who are opposed to changing that said, well, How can a police officer, when a car goes by at 70 miles an hour, know if it's a joint or a cigarette? And at 70 miles an hour, they can't. But as I said the other night, Monday night when we were discussing it, in our communities, when a police officer stops at a red light and looks to his right and he smells marijuana and sees somebody holding what looks like a marijuana joint, that individual is impairing their ability to drive, and the officer ought to be able to stop them. And I should note for your listeners, Paul, and for you, we right now are on track, unfortunately, to have the deadliest year on record on our highways in the state of Connecticut. And that's a trend that we've seen since 2020, that it continues to be higher levels than normal. There was a slight dip from 2022 to 2023, but 24, well, we're coming way up again on the fatalities. And you don't have to look very far in the news. There's a fatal crash on the news just about every day. And that's a sad state of affairs. And I can't help but note, too, the irony that goes on in this building when we have individual legislators here that are trying to push legislation to lower the BAC, the blood alcohol content, which in practical application is not going to have much of an effect the way that DWIs are handled in our state. And yet at the same time say it's okay for somebody to drive down the road smoking marijuana and no police officer can stop them. It lacks common sense.
It's mind-boggling, Greg. And the Greg Estes, a Republican state rep, Greg Howard, Stonington, who's also, by the way, an active duty police officer, so he knows from whence he speaks. And Greg, what would be so bad if, you know, you're going 40 or 50, you can't really see, but that kind of looks like a marijuana joint. So what's wrong with just doing a courtesy stop and saying, sir, I just want to make sure, is that marijuana or is that tobacco? No, I roll my own cigarettes, officer. Here's the tobacco. You can look at it. But then again, that would probably get knocked down on this whole thing about reducing police interaction with people.
Well, and I made that point the other night. I said, you know, for example, in our state, it's illegal to drink alcohol while driving, right? Certainly it's illegal to drive drunk, but it's also illegal to be driving down the road, drinking a can of beer. And we don't have police officers. I should say this too. We don't have police officers in this state now, nor did we prior to 2020 have police officers in large numbers stopping people drinking, you know, a can of soda and the officer thought it was a beer, or smoking a cigarette and the officer thought it was marijuana because, you know, it was legal to stop somebody for that before cannabis was legalized in 21. We didn't have that happening. And today, and I said the point the other night, if I took a beer can and I want to be environmentally friendly and reuse it, so I fill it with water, and then I start driving down the road, an officer sees me and pulls me over and says, well, you're drinking while driving. Well, no, I'm not, sir. Take a smell of this or pour it out and take a look for yourself. I just filled this can up with water. Okay, thank you for aiding law enforcement. Sorry to hold you up, sir. Have a good day. And, you know, some of the people who are opposed to trying to make this common sense change like to go to racial profiling, you know, and it's unfortunate that the Democrats in the state continue to go to that go-to message that police officers in this state are racist. The fact of the matter is Ken Barone, who is sort of the associate director and the guru of all things racial profiling in the state, testified on March 6th to the Judiciary Committee for the third year in a row. There is no statistically significant racial disparities in traffic stops in the state of Connecticut. The data shows that our police officers are not racist and are not racially profiling. And so why they continue to jump on that bandwagon, I don't know.
One of the things I want to cover before we have our time runs out, Greg, is this third vote that happened regarding consensual searches of a vehicle, not a forced search, not a search at gunpoint, but consensual searches. Define that and talk about the vote.
Yep. So, again, prior to the police accountability bill that passed the legislature in special session in 2020, police officers in this state and 49 other states, by the way, on a car stop could say to a driver, hey, may I search your car? And if the person said no and the officer didn't have some other underlying warrantless exception like probable cause in a motor vehicle, then the officer could not search and the person retained their right against the unreasonable search and they went on with their day. If they said, yes, you can search, the officers would and perhaps find something, some contraband or evidence, and maybe they wouldn't. But what's important to know is since 2020, we outlawed that in the police accountability bill. Police officers can no longer ask for consent at all. And the other thing we did in 2020, which has been a great addition to our law enforcement resources in this state, is we've implemented the use of dash cams and body cams in every patrol vehicle and every police officer. So all of this is captured on camera now. What we did in 2021, my first year in the legislature, was we crafted legislation that allowed officers to ask to solicit consent in a motor vehicle stop and also a search of a person, which was also outlawed in the police accountability bill. But we did it in a certain framework, Paul, where we, you know, we don't want police officers asking people to for consent searches based on race or based on the vehicle itself or where they may be, but upon some factual basis. So we put a standard in there that said they had to have reasonable suspicion of a crime. Then they could ask for consent, and if it was granted, they could search. If it was not granted, of course, they cannot. We did that for cars and people. Came out of the Judiciary Committee bipartisan. I worked really hard in 2021 with my colleagues and got that done. Unfortunately, the Democrat-led Senate amended just the car part out of the fix. So as it sits today, police officers under a certain framework can ask somebody, hey, may I search your person, which, by the way, courts have ruled numerous times is more intrusive than a search of a vehicle.
Yeah, really, I would think,
Right. So we're allowed to do that, but the police officers are not allowed to ask for consent at a car stop under the exact same framework. Again, doesn't make any sense.
Amazing. Greg Howard, finally, before we wrap it up here, this other bill, and Greg, I've talked about this bill, the lowering certain minor violations to where you cannot make a stop on these. I have people calling me up and emailing me saying, you've got to be kidding me. This is about, you know, broken taillights, busted out headlights, busted out windows. Don't they find crooks that way? And I said, well, yeah, kind of. But I know there's that bill to eliminate a bunch of them where you folks, you men and women in law enforcement, can make that the primary reason for the stop. What is the status of that bill?
Well, right now I have 16 amendments already filed and another 14 ready to go. As you probably know, in a short session, we're a week away from sine die. So time has become quite the friend of the Republican Party. The Democratic majority doesn't have the time for me to go through 30 amendments
Good for you.
On a bill. But I'll say this. It's important to know that that bill is really designed to do what the Democrat majority in Hartford wants to do, which is limit policing extensively. And they like to claim on that bill, no, we don't want to do that. We just don't want the police officers doing these minor things when they could be stopping major things like speeders.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, police officers in this state don't need the legislature telling them what's important and what's not in their in their district. They know how to do policing. We can start there. Second, the legislature, the Democrats, we got this bill killed in appropriations this year, but they ran a bill, 5331, that would prohibit suspending somebody's license when they fail to answer or pay a speeding infraction.
Yes, I saw that.
Thereby making speeding unenforceable. So they actually showed their hand in that bill in that they do not want traffic enforcement in this state. And when you go back and you look at the data-driven approach to crime and traffic safety, the DEDACS report that's been around for decades now, data point after data point will tell you, and of course anybody knows this anecdotally, the more traffic enforcement you have, the more compliance you have, the less crashes you have, the lower speed you have, the less fatalities you have. Well, we have right now, if you take calendar year 2019 and compare it to calendar year 2022, a 65% reduction in traffic stops by the state police, 50% reduction in traffic stops statewide, while fatalities spiked. The average speed on the highway has spiked. So one has the question, including me, why do legislative Democrats want to limit traffic enforcement when we are losing a person a day on our highways? I have no idea why they would want to do that. It's counterproductive to public safety. And as long as I'm here, we'll be standing in the way.
Well, Greg, thank you. Greg, if you have some time, put up more amendments to that ridiculous bill. Would you say you have 30? Make it 40 or 50, all right?
Yeah.
If you get a chance to do that.
I've stayed up for 5 or 6 days at a time on an investigation, so it's no problem for me.
Excellent. Caffeine up, my friend. State Rep. Greg Howard, Republican, Stonington, North Stonington area, and an active duty police officer as well. Greg, thanks. Fight the fight, and we'll talk to you down the road. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks.
These price hikes are continuing to drain nearly $1,000 from the typical Wisconsin family every single month. Chicken, I love chicken, is up 24%.
You can't script this. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media editor and columnist. Dan, how are you? How do you feel about chicken, Dan, these days? How do you feel about that?
I love chicken. I love chicken.
You can't script this stuff, Dan. You can't. First of all, how are you, my friend? Busy week. How are you?
Why don't the Democrats correctly call it what it is? Trumpflation.
Why are you whispering? Are you like in the house somewhere? You all right?
I'm in the Capitol press room, and I don't want to disrupt Mark Pazniokas.
Okay, yes, because I hear Paz can be tough. Hey, first of all, kudos, and I've been talking this up to people today. Kudos to that story, Dan. I'm telling people to read this. You interviewed, a couple of protesters in New Haven the other day. Briefly just summarize that story, because I thought it was excellent. It was really good.
I'm giving them credit for being out there and having their hearts in the right place, but they are dead wrong in respect to what they think and know about the struggle in Gaza and the war and what's happening. They're just, you know, they're supporting the wrong side. And I don't have a nicer way to put it. And
no.
Of course, everybody in the world laments any mass casualties in war, let alone genocide, which this is not. But that doesn't excuse what's happening. It's a terrorist government, and the terrorist government has to be brought down. Gaza needs to be occupied, and a civil government needs to be installed there. And the protesters are failing to see this.
Mm.
And that's essentially what I wrote. But unlike most people who are on the side of Israel, which I am, I gave them credit for their hearts being in the right place. These are smart people.
Sure.
Listen, you know, we have disagreements in this world, and that's one of them.
Absolutely. So what's the temperature up there like today, Dan? I know a lot of stuff happening, some stuff not happening. So give us an update. What do you have for us?
Well, the big climate bill, which is a way diluted version of what the climate bill was going to be,
mm-hmm.
is now running in the House. And the question is whether it's a 4-hour or a 6-hour or an 8-hour debate.
Mm-hmm.
This is a bill that doesn't have a lot of mandates. The one mandate in it is it requires towns to have a sustainability plan. They've really taken a lot of the mandates out in response to not only Republicans, because, of course, they're not going to get a lot of Republican votes,
mm-hmm.
but even moderate Democrats who were uncomfortable because, you know, towns, as I think you're probably aware of the issue between towns and the state legislature about mandates. You've said a few things about it over the years. So it's really fundamentally an incentive bill that would give incentives for example, the heat exchangers and
sure.
you know, battery storage technology, anything that jumpstarts alternative fuel and alternative energies in both the household and to some lesser extent the industry. Is going to be incentivized. This will pass. They do have the votes. And my guess is it's going to get a few Republican votes as well, because there's nothing really wrong with it. There's nothing onerous.
Mm-hmm.
But that's being debated right now. I don't even know what the Senate is doing at the moment.
It could be a good or a bad thing. We don't know.
Well, that's right. That's right. Everybody. Right. And yesterday they had the big bill about the libraries.
Yes.
Whether to fight back against the five big publishers that are charging a fortune for e-books.
Mm-hmm.
And the Democrats said enough is enough. People are paying too much for e-books. The public is paying too much through libraries. Let's just stop this and say no. And the Republicans were saying, but you're not going to have books. And the bill, I didn't follow it, but I believe the bill died because there was talk today about bringing it back.
Yeah, I think it did.
As we speak, there's a protest that we're trying to peer out.
Oh, really?
Paul Hughes and I are trying to peer out the window and see what it is.
Look at this.
But it's May Day.
You're my on-the-spot reporter here. This is outstanding. What are we hearing about the budget here? Better numbers? Maybe good, maybe bad? Let's finish up on that. What do you have for us there?
Yeah, the budget. The news yesterday was that revenues are up very significantly when you count the famous estimates and finals, which is essentially three things. It's capital gains, it's interest income,
okay.
and rental income. I believe it's rental income, but it's also the LLC income, right? So it's all the people that file quarterly.
Yeah.
Those numbers are what's been driving Connecticut's huge surpluses, and they're way up again. They're up by about $700 million just from the January estimate. That's the good news. The bad news is it doesn't help you for all the people that are out screaming for more money outside. These are the immigrants, I believe,
mm.
because they got a press release. They want immigrant health care, and they're not going to get it.
we already know that that Medicaid expansion is not happening this year. But for people like that, and the school lunch people, and the nonprofit service providers, for all the people who want and may deserve more money, there's no mechanism to get the money because the caps are still in place.
Mm-hmm.
And there are two caps that are in place. One is the cap that says you can't spend over a certain threshold, you can't spend more of that quarterly filing income, that those capital gains. And the more important cap right now is the 4% spending cap. So the solution, if you have 30 more seconds,
sure, plenty.
The Democrats are planning on they're essentially buying up ARPA money. In other words, if you're a town maybe, or you're a state agency and you've been promised ARPA money,
mm-hmm.
they're saying we need that ARPA money for the budget. Give it back to us, and we'll bond the money for you.
Interesting. Right. Wow.
So they're buying up ARPA money. You know, just like you and I would buy up land.
Yeah.
You would buy up land because you're one of those rich guys.
Oh, yeah.
So what they're going to do is they're going to use the ARPA money to fill gaps in the budget, and they're going to call it one time, and next year at this time, not this time, next January, on January, the first Wednesday in January, they're going to come up against a huge cliff, and they're going to realize that the budget doesn't work, and they're going to be forced to adjust
it. Oh.
They're going to be forced to adjust the caps at that time.
And
that's this. I've had lengthy conversations with people about that, and that's what they're setting up right now. The only way around that is if they find some other way to do the money this time, which nobody has a way of doing, or if so much tax money comes roaring in, that they don't need to raid the caps in January to fill the budget. But they're creating a problem, but it's a good problem to have because you have the money, right? In other words, the quote-unquote problem that they're creating is, gee whiz, we're going to have to figure out a way to get at our money.
Yeah.
You know, think of it like your kid,
yeah.
right? If you have a kid and you have a savings account in custody for the kid, right? And the kid is 10 and the kid wants $100 to buy, you know, you pick a thing, anything. Right. And you say, well, the kid says, well, that's my money in the bank right there. And you say, no, it isn't. And then the kid says, I see the statement. It says cost for, you know, blah, blah, blah. And that's essentially what this is. It's our money, but under the rules, we can't get at it. And the game is how much are we willing to bend the rules?
Wow.
And the governor is willing to bend the rules a little bit.
Yeah.
The Republicans are willing to bend the rules not at all so that they can make a point.
Wow.
And the liberal Democrats want the rules to be significantly bent.
Interesting. Scoff up the ARPA money and then bond it out next year. Interesting. Dan, thank you. Dan Hart, live today from the press room at the Capitol. Dan, have a happy day. Good weekend. And we'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
And on that budget question, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. Rhetorical question. Dan, thanks. Take care, my friend. Be good.
Take care.
Bye. All right. Dan Hart, live there from the press room at the Capitol. So how about that?